it's been maybe about a year since we talked to you. So a lot of time has passed, and now the election day is drawing near. Just to start, Brian, I wanted to ask you, what qualities would you suggest to voters are the most important that they should look for in a state's attorney, and in kind of what ways do you feel that you have those characteristics?
Well, Cameron, thank you very much for having me. I think the most important thing for a state's attorney is experience, and you're not going to find anybody with more experience than me at this particular point. I've been practicing for 17 years, and all of that has been as a state's attorney or an assistant state's attorney. I spent 12 years in Henry County. I spent 5 years here now in Knox County. I look at a state's attorney's position or an assistant state's attorney's position as a little bit different than just being a lawyer. You don't really have the same type of duties as if you're a civil attorney or practicing divorce or family law or anything like that. You have to work with the police officers. You don't do that. You work with clients in civil law. As a state's attorney, you work with the police officers. You work with social service agencies. You work with probation. You work with victims of violent crimes, victims of crime just in general. And I have the experience for that, and that's why I believe the experience is actually the most important quality for a state's attorney.
I did want to ask you that because you spent your entire legal career as a prosecutor, correct?
Yep.
Was that always what you planned to do with your law degree, or is there something in particular that you enjoy about that aspect of law?
Well, when I was in law school, I had during the summers I would work two different jobs. I worked as a lawyer. I worked in a civil firm my first year after law school, and my second year I worked as a 7-Eleven license as a prosecutor up in Henry County, and it was night and day. I just couldn't believe what a difference being a prosecutor versus being a civil attorney was.
Yeah.
Civil law just really wasn't for me. Mm-hmm. So, I've never wanted to do anything else in my life other than be a prosecutor.
Since you, I know you, something actually that I think you have in common with your opponent, Jeremy Carlin, both of you have run for state's attorney's offices before, Jeremy Carlin in Knox County, you in Henry County, and I would ask him the same thing, but is there anything that you learned from the last time you campaigned for state's attorney, albeit a different county, that you would incorporate into your run this time?
Well, my run last time was a lot different because my son had just been born, and it wasn't exactly an easy time in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wasn't happy in the job I was at. And so being here in Knox County, campaigning in the county that I live in now,
yeah,
and was born and raised in, makes life so much easier for me.
Sure.
I was driving an hour each way every day. I was exhausted by the time the day was over. So campaigning kind of took a backseat to just trying to maintain a family life.
Yeah.
So the biggest difference is that I have time and the ability to get out and do more things. Plus, I would also say that I have a lot more support this time. I have more support from people in the community, people in my office, people everywhere are very supportive of what I'm doing. So that has also been a big difference.
I wanted to ask you, as a state's attorney, what is your opinion on transparency? How much of a priority would you make it, and kind of how do you envision being a transparent state's attorney?
Well, there's a fine line you have to develop between being transparent and following your ethical obligations.
Mm-hmm.
None of the documents the public can't come up and ask to see my court file. They just can't. And you also have ethical obligations with regard to how much you can talk about cases and things like that. So you have to strike a delicate balance between those two things. Other than that, with regards to budgets and stuff like that, that's all done through the county and that's all posted on the websites. And I don't think that that's really an issue with being a transparent state's attorney. You know what the people in my office would make. You know what I would make. You know all of those things. And With the caveat of the ethical obligations, I'm happy to talk about what's going on with the office, but it has to be kind of in general terms.
Mm-hmm.
So,
within reason, though, you would keep yourself open to, I guess, responses to the public, that sort of thing, if they had interest in what was going on.
Yeah, I'd be happy to talk to anybody if they had interest. But like I said, with the caveat that I'm not going to discuss a specific case with somebody that's not a party to that case, a victim I would be happy to talk with about anything that's going on. And Illinois has the Victims' Bill of Rights. So I would be happy to just make that, have that discussion with them. So, but other than that, I have to kind of keep things a little bit closer to the vest at some point.
Sure. I did want to ask you about domestic violence. I know there, unfortunately, is a decent amount of that that goes on here. And I would imagine in this year, it's probably increased with COVID and economic distress. Can you talk a little bit about, I know these cases can be challenging. Could you talk about why they're challenging and maybe your general approach to these sorts of issues?
Well, domestic violence is most challenging because of the victims. I think I've seen studies that talk about it 7 or 8 times before even a victim will call for the very first time to the police that they've been struck or abused in some manner before they even make that call. And once the call is made and the officers go out there and they arrest somebody, then everything else starts happening. The phone calls from the jail start happening to the victim again from the defendant. And family pressures start happening. So by the time we get to a trial, the victim has pretty well changed their mind for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it tough. Now, that's not saying every victim. We do have victims who are cooperative with the state's attorney's office. They come in, they talk to us, we have good working relationship with them, and in those cases, most of the time, convictions happen.
Mm-hmm.
But the major obstacle to domestic violence prosecution is victim cooperation.
Yeah.
And the way to counter that is to start with the victims early, talk to them, continue to have try to get the judicial side to put no contacts in with the victim so that the defendant's not back in the house, not causing problems. But then you also develop all the social pressures of family members talking to the victims, of the defendant even talking to the victims, no matter what that no contact order is.
Mm-hmm.
So domestic violence is probably the most challenging of all the cases that I have to prosecute because of those reasons.
Yeah. And there's not, I don't imagine there's a lot you can do without the cooperation of the victim, is there?
There's something called victimless prosecution.
Uh-huh.
It takes a lot of work. It does. Sure. It is possible to get a conviction without a victim. I remember one case that I did where the victim came in and refused to cooperate. But there was, if the police officers take a written statement or a recorded statement, you get to put that in, mm-hmm. and the judge gets to hear that. You can photographs, major portion of a case for victimless prosecution, but you still have to get that person there to court, which is a big challenge because it only comes in if you can get that person to sit in the chair.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't get them in the chair, which a lot of the time they duck service, they do things like that. But I think the best thing to do and the easiest thing to do is to start early with them. Like I said, you gotta have your victim witness coordinator immediately contacting them, trying to get them to understand why we do what we do.
Mm. I do want to bring up something that your opponent has criticized the current state's attorney's office for. I think he calls it stacking charges. In other words, initially charging defendants with anything, I guess, somewhat applicable to the arrest, and then kind of later figuring out what charge is the most appropriate. I guess I'm asking, is that a practice that you would admit that goes on? And if it is it something that you would defend? I guess, can you defend it?
Well, that does not happen.
Okay.
The charges that are filed by a prosecutor you have to have probable cause to believe that those charges even exist. So if he thinks that we're stacking charges, it's just because we're charging them with the most serious things the most serious crimes that are available to us at that particular time. You get somebody who comes in with a scale and 6 grams of methamphetamine. Yeah, we're going to charge you with possession with intent. You're going to get charged with possession. So there's going to be a bunch of different charges. Now, does that mean we're going to plead you to the most serious charge every time? No, That doesn't. You have to take a lot of things into consideration when you do a plea agreement. It's not just the most serious charge out there. It's everything that goes into the plea agreement. It's the strength of your case. It's if it's not a case like that, it's wishes of the victim. It's, you know, things like that. You talk to the police officers. Maybe something happened that the defendant gave them some information that led to a bigger bust. So sometimes there are things out there that we take into account when we make a plea agreement, and we don't stack charges. We charge them with what we think we can prove based on probable cause.
And I want to ask you, do you believe that the state's attorney's office has any sort of duty to reduce any apparent racial disparities in the criminal legal system, or do you consider that something that's kind of beyond the scope of the state's attorney's office?
Well, it is really kind of beyond the scope of the state's attorney's office. We're not out there arresting. We're not out there bringing people to jail. We're not out there doing those kinds of things. When I get in the morning, I have a list sitting on my desk of the people who were arrested overnight, and then I start getting reports once those start coming in. To be honest with you, I never look at any of the boxes about who's been arrested, what gender, race, none of that stuff comes into a play when I'm looking at what I'm going to charge. It's just the people who are on the jail list and what we need to do for the day. So I don't think that the state's attorney's office really can deal with that problem out there right now. We react to what has already happened, and we're not out there. We don't drum up business for ourselves. We've got plenty of cases on our own.
I know you do. I've talked. It's a little different, but I've also talked to the judicial candidates about how why they've declared for the party that they have, even though sometimes it's not clear to me exactly why. Maybe state's attorney's candidates file for one party or another, or why it's a partisan election, but it is. You're running as a Republican. Jeremy Carlin's running as a Democrat. I just kind of wondered why you're running as a Republican and kind of how you see the Republican philosophy fitting into how you would act as a state's attorney.
Well, I think the Republicans tend to go towards the side of law and order. They follow the laws that are out there, and that's exactly what I do. I look at my book before I charge anything. I look at the Illinois compiled statutes. That's what I spend my time with. Deciding what I'm going to charge. Now, after 17 years, I don't always open up the book. I don't necessarily need to on some of those things, but I stick to what's chargeable. And I think that's kind of where the Republican Party fits in here, kind of the law and order party a little bit more. I chose to run as a Republican. Like you mentioned earlier, in Henry County, I ran as a Republican as well. And it kind of goes back to my boss back in Henry County. He kind of took me under his wing and showed me the ropes of prosecution. That was Terry Patton back when I started in 2003 being a prosecutor. So I kind of just fell into that party up in Henry County, and I continued it here.
Okay. Anything else that voters should know, or anywhere that you can send them if they'd like to know more about you?
Well, I do have a Facebook page. It's Brian Kerr for Knox County State's Attorney. That's really what I've got for social media right now. Mm-hmm. I don't have anything else on the internet at this point.
All right. Very good. Well, yeah, go ahead.
I think the voters need to look at, like I said earlier, experience. And experience counts in this particular job. I have the experience. I have the ability. I have been a prosecutor all my life. And I have the support that's necessary in order to do this. I've run an office before. I was at least appointed state's attorney for a few months up in Henry County. I've run an office. I've been working with Mr. Pettmeyer currently, helping to run the Knox County State's Attorney's Office. I'm working with budgets this year. I'm doing those kinds of things that I will hit the ground running, and I will be the best state's attorney for Knox County that I can be. And I am devoted to the prosecution of the prosecution here in Knox County. So,
okay. Thank you so much for your time, Brian.
Thank you very much, Cameron.